far beyond exhaustion, as they hauled an enormous block up a mud-covered ramp made of stripped logs. Atop the Dream Temple, the wavering image of Anakin Skywalker spoke more forcefully. "Yes, but the ways of the Sith can lead you to a stronger grasp of your own power. You can wipe out the last vestiges of the pitiful empire that continues to harass your new republic. You can become more than a mere servant to a frail and corrupt government. You can administer the galaxy yourself as a benevolent ruler. You deserve it more than any other person, Luke. You can control everything if you use the Force as your tool instead of allowing yourself to become its servant." Luke stiffened, unable to believe what his father was saying. Then he noticed that with the rising passion in his voice, the image of Anakin Skywalker became less distinct, wavering until it transformed into only a black outline, an engulfing hooded form that sucked energy from the air. Slowly, Luke realized the truth. "You were not my father," he shouted as the illusion began to crumble. "My father was a good man in the end, healed by the light side." Streaks of brilliant light flashed across the dreamscape sky of ancient Yavin 4. Below, the Sassi slaves fled into the jungles in terror as the monumental temples crumbled under a barrage of laser blasts from orbit. Old Republic battleships had arrived, immolating the moon's surface. "Who are you?" Luke shouted at the figure through the roar of sudden blazing devastation around him. "Who?" Instead, the hollow shadow laughed and laughed, ignoring the destruction that erupted from the construction site, or amused by it. The Masasi temples exploded, the thick rainforest burst into flame. The dark man's silhouette grew larger and larger, swallowing up the sky. Luke backed away from it, but his dream feet reached the edge of the imposing temple, and he stumbled backward, falling away, falling. Surrounded by the thick stone walls of his quarters, Gantris did not even attempt to sleep. He sat on his bunk, dreading the arrival of the dark man from his nightmares. He fingered the lightsaber he had constructed, feeling its smooth cylinder, the rough spots where he had welded the pieces together, the buttons that would activate the energy blade. He wondered how he could use it against the ancient specter who had taught him things that terrified him, things that Master Skywalker would never show his Jedi trainees. "Do you mean to strike me down with that weapon?" the hollow voice said. Gantris whirled to see the oily, infinitely black silhouette oozed out of the massive stones in the wall. His impulse was to ignite the lightsaber and slash the violet-white blade across the dark form. But he restrained himself, knowing it would do no good. The Shadow Man laughed, then spoke with his antiquated accent. "Good. I am glad to see you have learned to respect me. 4,000 years ago, the entire military fleet of the Old Republic and the combined forces of hundreds of Jedi Masters could not destroy me. You would certainly be unable to do so alone." The dark man had shown him how to borrow energy from other living things to shore up his own reserves. His mind was alert, but his nerves were frayed and his body exhausted. "What do you want with me?" Gantris said. "You don't just want to teach me." The Shadow Man agreed. "I want your anger, Gantris. I want you to open the doorways of power. I am barred from the physical plane, but with enough other Sith followers, I could be at peace. I could even live again." "I won't let you have my anger." Gantris swallowed, searching for a core of strength within himself. "A Jedi does not give in to anger. There is no passion. There is serenity." "Don't quote platitudes to me," the dark man said in a cold, vibrating voice. "There is no ignorance. There is knowledge," Gantris continued, repeating the Jedi code. "There is no passion. There is serenity." The dark man laughed again. "Serenity? Let me show you what is happening at this moment. Do you recall the people you saved from Eol Shah? How happy you were to learn they had been taken to a place of safety, a paradise world? Observe." Inside the black cutout form of the hooded man, an image appeared, displaying the grasslands of the planet Dantooine. The scene looked familiar to Gantris after seeing the progress tapes delivered by Wedge Antilles. But now he saw Imperial lasers striking down, leveling colony buildings, giant armored walkers striding across the savanna, blasting anything that moved, igniting the temporary living units. People ran screaming. His people. Gantris recognized most of their faces, but before he could name them, they dissolved one by one in brilliant flashes as they tried to flee. The trees blazed in conical bonfires. Black, clumpy smoke rose in jagged swirls. You lie. This is a trick. I have no need of lies when the truth is so devastating. You can do nothing to stop it. Do you enjoy watching your people die? Does that not spark your anger? In your anger lies strength. Gantaris saw the old man, Wharton, whom he had known his entire life, standing in the middle of the Holocaust. Wharton stared around him, hands dangling at his sides, frozen in shock, until a thick green bolt cut him down. No, Gantaris shouted. Let loose your anger. Make me stronger. No, he repeated, turning his head away from the images of burned ruins and blackened bodies. They are all dead. All of them, the dark man taunted. No survivors. Gantaris ignited his lightsaber and lunged at the dark man. With an insistent bleeping, R2-D2 woke Luke from his nightmares. He snapped awake, using a Jedi technique to dispel the weariness and shock of the sudden waking. What is it, R2? The droid whistled, telling him something about a message waiting in the command center. Luke shrugged into his soft robe and hurried across the cold floor in the early light of planet rise. Taking the turbo lift down to the second level of the temple, he entered the once bustling command center. R2, bring up the lights. He picked his path through the equipment, dust-covered chairs, shut-down computer consoles, document tables cluttered with debris. He powered on the communications station that Wedge had insisted on installing during his last supply run. The image of Han Solo waited impatiently for him, fidgeting in the holofield. When he saw Luke appear in the transmission locus, Han grinned up at him. Hey, Luke, sorry I forgot to account for time differential. Not even dawn there, is it? Luke brushed his brown hair into place with his fingers. Even Jedi need to sleep sometime, Han. Han laughed. Well, you'll be getting less sleep when your new student arrives. I just wanted to tell you that Kip Duron has had enough of his vacation. I think after all that time in the spice mines, he got used to being miserable. The closest thing to the spice mines I could think of was your Jedi Academy. That way he can work all day long, but at least he'll be improving himself in the process. Luke smiled at his old friend. I'd be honored to have him join us, Han. I've been waiting for him. He has the strongest potential of all the trainees I've seen so far. Just wanted to let you know he's coming, Han said. I'm trying to arrange for the next available transport to Yavin 4. Luke frowned. Why don't you just bring him in the Falcon? Han hung his head, looking extremely troubled. Because I don't own the Falcon anymore. What? Han seemed filled with embarrassment, eager to end the communication. Look, I've got to go. I'll tell Leia hello for you and give the kids a hug. All right, Han, but... Han gave a sheepish grin and quickly terminated the transmission. Luke continued to stare at the blank space where Han's image had been. First his nightmare of a dark man masquerading as Anakin Skywalker, and now the grim news that Han had lost the Millennium Falcon. Luke heard a disturbance coming down the hall, clumsy footsteps slapping on the stone floor, panicked shouts. He looked up, ready to scold one of his students for such blatant lack of control, when the cloned alien, Dorsk 81, rushed into the control center. Master Skywalker, you must come immediately. Luke sensed waves of horror and misery spilling from his candidate. What is it? He asked. Use the calming technique I showed you. But Dorsk 81 grabbed his arm. This way. The yellow olive alien urged him out of the cluttered control room. Luke sensed widening ripples of alarm traveling like an earthquake through the solid stone of the temple. They ran along the flagstoned corridors, up the turbolift, and into the section of living quarters where the trainees made their homes. A sour, smoky stench filled the air, and Luke felt an icy lump in his stomach as he pushed cautiously forward. Hardbitten Cam Solusar and Addled Streen both stood outside the open doorway to Gantaris's quarters, looking pasty and ill. Luke hesitated for a fraction of a second, then moved through the doorway. Inside the small stone chamber, he saw what was left of Gantaris. The body lay crisped and blackened on the floor, burned from the inside out. Singed stains on the flagstones showed where he had thrashed about in the conflagration. Gatterus' skin flaked in black, peeling ashes over his pottery bones. Rising wisps of steam curled from the remaining fabric of his Jedi robe. On the floor, the newly constructed lightsaber lay where Gatterus had dropped it, as if he had tried to fight something and lost. Luke leaned against the cool stone wall to catch his balance. His vision blurred, but he could not tear his gaze from his dead student sprawled in front of him. By now, the other 11 trainees had gathered. Luke grasped the worn stone bricks at the edge of the door until even the rounded corners bruised his fingers. He applied a Jedi calming technique 3 times before he felt confident enough to trust his voice. The words tasted like wet ash in his mouth, as Yoda had told him so long ago. "Beware the dark side," he said. 11. After 8 seemingly random hyperspace jumps to shake any possible pursuit, Ackbar took his B-wing fighter along the correct vector to the hidden planet Anna. Turpfin had borrowed the fighter for him, claiming to have purged the records of its existence. Ackbar didn't want to know how his mechanic had gotten through the security system so easily. For years, isolated Anoth had been a haven for the Jedi children, protected by its perfect obscurity and anonymity. The twins had gone home to Coruscant only a month or two before, but the youngest child, 1-year-old baby Anakin, remained under the protection of Leia's devoted servant Winter, far from prying Imperial eyes or dark side influences that could corrupt the baby's fragile, force-sensitive mind. As space snapped into sharp focus, Ackbar saw the clustered multiple planet of Anoth. The world was composed of 3 large fragments orbiting a common center of mass. The 2 largest pieces hovered nearly in contact, sharing a poisonous, stormy atmosphere. The 3rd and more distant fragment orbited in a precarious, almost safe position where Ackbar, Luke, and Winter had set up a hidden stronghold. Skittering electrostatic discharges danced from the 2 touching pieces of Anoth, and the ionized fury bathed the habitable chunk in electrical storms that served to mask the planet from prying eyes. The entire system was unstable, and in a blink of cosmic time, it would destroy itself. But for the last century or so, it had been possible for humanoid life to establish a foothold there. Ackbar brought his B-wing in on close approach through the deep purple skies of Anoth. Sparks discharged from the wing of his fighter, but he felt no threat. This was not like flying through the storms of Vortex. Inside the cramped B-wing, Ackbar wore only a flight suit over his big frame, not his admiral's uniform. Later, he would leave the borrowed fighter in the Calamarian shipyards, where a New Republic pilot could shuttle it back to Coruscant. Ackbar would not be flying a starfighter again, so he had no need of it. He sent a brief signal to inform Winter of his arrival, but he did not respond to her surprise or her questions. Switching off the fighter's comm unit, he rehearsed how he would tell her all that had happened. Then he concentrated on guiding the B-wing in for a landing. Below him, the surface of Anoth was a craggy forest of rocky spires, sharp ledges, and claw-like peaks that were riddled with caves left behind when volatile inclusions in the rocks had evaporated over the centuries, leaving only glass-like rock. Inside the labyrinth of smooth tunnels, Winter had made a temporary home with the Jedi babies. Now she had only 1 child left to care for, and in another year, when Anakin reached the age of 2, Winter could return to Coruscant and to active service with the New Republic government. The small white sun never brought much daylight to Anoth, bathing the world in gothic purple twilight lit by stark flashes of interplanetary lightning discharges. Ackbar and Luke Skywalker had found this planet, choosing it from among the possibilities as the safest place to hide the Jedi children. And now Ackbar had come 1 last time before returning to his homeworld of Calamari. He felt sympathy for baby Anakin, who had not known a more welcoming place during his first year. Ackbar had always felt a close attachment to the 3rd child, but he had come to say goodbye before fading from public view forever. He flew the B-wing in among the spired forests and rock outcroppings. It reminded him of the tall, fluted towers of the Cathedral of Winds on Vortex. That thought gave him a stab of pain, and he tried not to think of it further. He cruised the ship in among the rocks, flying confidently as he arrowed toward the opening to the network of caves. With landing jets and a careful manipulation of repulsor lifts, Ackbar managed to land the starfighter smoothly on the wide grotto floor. As he powered down the engines and prepared to disembark, a metal crash door swung open. A tall, rigid-looking woman stood at the doorway. Her robes and her white hair clearly identified her as Leia's ageless servant, Winter. Even for a human, she looked strikingly distinctive to Akbar. He climbed stiffly out of his ship and turned his salmon-colored head away to keep from meeting her eyes. He saw with a backward glance that the one-year-old baby toddled at Winter's feet, making happy noises, curious to see the new visitor. Akbar felt a shudder go through him as he realized he would probably never see the dark-haired boy again. Winter spoke in her flat, no-nonsense voice. He had never heard her upset before.
Admiral Akbar, please tell me what has happened.
He turned to face her, showing his flight suit, his lack of military insignia. I am no longer an admiral, he said, and it is a long story. Akbar sat eating a meal of reconstituted rations that Winter had somehow managed to make palatable. As he told her every detail of the tragedy on Vortex and how he had resigned from his service, Winter did not appear judgmental. She simply listened, blinking rarely, nodding even less often. Baby Anakin crouched on Akbar's lap, cooing and reaching up in curiosity to pat Akbar's clammy skin and touch his huge glassy eyes. Anakin giggled as the round eyes swiveled in various directions to avoid being poked by pudgy fingers.
Will you stay here for an evening's rest?
Winter said. Her sentence cut off sharply as if she had been about to call him Admiral.
No,
Akbar said, holding the baby against him with flipper hands. I can't. No one must suspect that I have come here, and if I delay too long, they will realize I have not gone directly to Calamari. Winter hesitated and then spoke in a voice that seemed less able to conceal emotion than it normally did.
Akbar, you know I have the greatest respect for your abilities. It would honor me if you would stay here with me instead of going into hiding on your homeworld.
Akbar looked at the human woman and felt a surge of emotion well up inside him. Winter's mere suggestion had been powerful enough to strip away layers of guilt and shame with which he had buried himself. When he did not answer immediately, she pressed further.
I'm all alone here, and I could use your help. It gets lonely for the baby, and for me.
Akbar finally managed to speak, avoiding Winter's gaze, but giving his answer before he could change his mind. Your offer honors me, Winter, but I am not worthy, at least not at the moment. I must go to Calamari and search for peace there.